The next morning, people saw what the town council had done. They said the trees blocked the light from the street lamps. People were mad as hell about it, mad enough to spit. My mother was still mad about it for years afterward. She's the one who told me about this piece of town history and kept this old picture. Men, she used to say. She never forgave my father. He was on the town council. Wait now, Lewis said. I thought you said we were good for some things. No, you're still on probation. But this boy can be different, she said. I have hopes for him. She took Jamie's face in her hands. You're a good boy. Don't you forget that. Don't you let anyone make you think otherwise. You won't, will you? No. That's right. She let him go. Thank you for supper, he said. Well, honey, you're very welcome. They started home then. Eddie, Lewis, Jamie, and the dog went out into the cool summer dark. It's a beautiful night, Eddie called. Yes, Ruth called. Yes. Good night. Chapter 24. One morning, while it was still cool, they took Bonnie out in the country to let her run. They put the protective tube on her foot and drove out to the west of town onto a straight gravel road. There were sunflowers in the barrow ditch and short blue stem and soapweed. Jamie let the dog out of the back seat and took the leash off. She looked up at him, waiting. Go on, Lewis said. You can run now. Take off. He clapped his hands. She jumped up and began running down the road and in and out of the barrow ditches, her protected paw making a soft thud in the hard road as she ran. The boy ran out after her. Addie and Lewis followed, walking slowly, watching them. No cars came on the road while they were there. This has been a good idea, Addie said, getting this dog. He does seem happier. That, and he's made an adjustment to being here with us. Who knows if it'll continue when he goes home? They came running back. The boy was red-faced and panting. She can run all right with her hurt paw, he said. Did you see her? The dog looked at the boy, and they ran off again. It was getting hot now, middle of July. The sky unclouded and the wheat in the fields alongside the road already cut, the stubble all neat and sheared off square. In the next field, the corn running in straight, dark, green rows. A bright, hot summer's day. Chapter 25. In late July, Ruth went to the bank on Main Street with another old lady who was still permitted to drive, and standing at the teller counter, she took up the money she was withdrawing from savings, folded it into her purse, and zipped the pocket, and turned to leave, and turned halfway around toward the door, and fell down, and died. Just collapsed in a final, frail bundle on the tiled bank floor, and stopped breathing. They said afterward that she had probably stopped breathing before she even hit the floor. The other woman covered her mouth with her hand and began to cry. They called for the ambulance, but she was long past saving. They didn't bother taking her to the hospital. The coroner came to certify her death, and they took her to the funeral home in town on Birch Street. Her body was cremated, and there was a small funeral at the Presbyterian Church 2 days later. Not many of her friends were still alive. Old ladies, a few old men who came limping and shuffling into the church and sat down in the pews, and some of them leaned and nodded over with their chins rested on their thin chests and slept a while, and then woke when the hymn started. Addie and Lewis sat down in front. She had arranged the funeral and told the minister about Ruth. He hadn't known her at all. She had stopped going to any church because of her feelings about orthodoxy and the childish ways in which churches talked and thought about God. Afterward, the people attending the funeral all went back to their silent homes, and Addie took the enameled urn of her ashes to her house. It turned out the old lady had no immediate family except for a distant niece in South Dakota who became her inheritor. The niece came to Holt in the next week and met with the lawyer and the realtor, and the house that Ruth had lived in for decades was sold in a month to a retired man and his wife from out of state. The niece didn't want the urn. "Do you want it?" she said. Addie took it, and at 2 in the morning in the dark, she and Lewis spread her ashes in the backyard behind Ruth's house. Now it wasn't the same as it was when Ruth was there, and they could all go out for a night to the drive-in cafe and afterward to a softball game. They decided Jamie didn't have to know about all of this. They told him she had gone to live somewhere else. They decided that wasn't entirely a lie. "She was a good person, wasn't she?" Lewis said. "I admired her." "I miss her already," Addie said. "What's going to happen to us? To you and me?" Chapter 26 Addie said, after Connie's death, Carl wasn't himself. He seemed all right on the outside when he was with other people, away from home and at his office, but it changed him. He loved our daughter. More than me. More than Jean. He didn't pay as much attention to Jean after that, and when he did, it was often critical to correct him. Many times I talked to him about it, and he said he would try to do better, but it was never the same, and it affected Jean. I know it did. I tried to make up for that, but that didn't work either.
What about you and him? That must have changed, too.
We stopped making love for a year after Connie's death. He wasn't interested. Then when he was interested again, it wasn't much good. It was more just physical than anything loving and emotional. After a year or so, we stopped altogether.
When was that?
10 years before he died.
Did you miss it?
Of course. I missed the closeness more. We weren't at all close anymore. We were cordial and sort of formally pleasant and polite, but that was all.
I didn't know any of this.
I didn't notice. No, but how would you have noticed? In public, we were kind, even affectionate. And we didn't see you very much, even if we were neighbors. But nobody knew, really. I didn't tell anyone, and I'm sure Carl didn't. Jean knew, but he may have come to think that that's the way it goes, how life is, that married people were that way to each other.
That seems pretty miserable to me.
Oh, it was bad. I tried talking, but he wouldn't talk. I tried coming to bed naked, put on perfume. I even ordered skimpy little nightgowns from a catalog. He thought it was disgusting. He got rough, kind of mean when we did make love, the few times we did. Of course, it wasn't love at all. He made me feel worse. I quit trying to fix things, and we settled into our long, polite, and quiet life. I took Jean to Denver to concerts and plays and tried to give him more than just this house and its secrets, to get him out of Holt and show him a larger world. I can't say that worked well either. Jean stayed closed up like his father. He got more so in high school. Then he went off to college, and we didn't see him even as much as we did before. So I began to go to Denver myself, to plays and concerts. I treated myself. I felt I deserved it. I stayed at the Brown Palace Hotel and went out alone for expensive dinners. I bought a few dresses that I wore only in Denver. I didn't want to show myself in Holt in those clothes. I didn't want people to know. I expect people knew something anyway. Your wife may have.
If she did, she never said anything about it to me.
I always liked that about Diane. I thought she was someone you could trust not to gossip or talk meanly. But you still slept together all those years. You didn't want separate beds. I suppose that sounds strange, but somehow that was what little we kept. We never touched each other. You learn how to stay strictly on your side and not to touch even by accident in the night. You take care of each other when you're sick, and in the daytime you each do what you think of as your job. Carl would bring me flowers to make up, and people in town would think, how nice. But all the time there'd be this secret of silence.
Then he died, Lewis said.
Yes. I took care of him all along. I wanted to do that. I needed to. He was sick off and on before he died that Sunday morning in the church. So, yes, I took care of him. I don't know what else I would have done. We had that long time of joined life, even if it wasn't good for either one of us. That was our history. Chapter 27. At midweek, they packed Lewis's pickup and drove west, up out of the plains, toward the mountains, watching the mountains rise up higher as they got closer to the Front Range, the dark, forested lower foothills, and farther back the white peaks above treeline, still with patches of snow even in July, and drove onto U.S. Highway 50 and went on through the few towns. They stopped in one of the towns for hamburgers and then drove up the highway through the Arkansas River Canyon, the beautiful, fast water, steep, red, jagged cliffs on each side. There were Rocky Mountain sheep along the road, all ewes with short, sharp horns, and went on and then turned off toward North Fork Campground on County Road 240 and entered the National Forest. There were not many people or campers in the campground. They got out and began to unload the pickup at a site near the creek. They could hear it running and rushing. The clear, icy water with brook trout holed up in the hollows below the rocks. There were tall fir trees and big ponderosas and aspen along the creek and back in the hillside. Tent and camper sites were marked off by timbers, and there were picnic tables and fire pit rings nearby. "We'll look around after we get camp set up," Lewis said. The boy helped set up the tent where Lewis said was a good, flat, smooth place that wasn't too close to the fire ring. Lewis showed him how to position the tent poles and stretch the guide ropes tight and peg them in the ground, how to fold back the window coverings and the door flap. They put their blow-up mattresses and sleeping bags inside, Jamie and Bonnie to sleep on one side, Addie and Lewis on the other. Addie unzipped one of the bags and spread it out for herself and Lewis, and unzipped the other and laid it over the first sleeping bag so they could have a wide, comfortable bed together, and spread out another bag for Jamie. Then the camp was set up, and they went over to the creek and waded in the icy waters. "It's too cold, Grandma."
"It comes straight out of a snowbank, honey."
By now it was getting dark, long past supper time. Lewis and the boy hauled wood from the pickup, since cutting any limbs or trees wasn't permitted in the National Forest. Jamie gathered up twigs and little dry branches from the ground, and they laid a small fire inside the circle of rocks and propped a grate over it, and Addie and the boy cooked hot dogs and canned beans in an iron frying pan and got out some raw carrots and chips. When the food was hot, they sat down at the picnic table and ate and watched the fire.
"You want to get some more wood?" Lewis said.
Jamie and the dog went out of the firelight to the pickup, and the boy brought an armload of wood back.
"Go ahead and lay some of it on," Lewis said.
He put a piece of wood on the fire, his arms stretched out, his eyes watering and blinking in the smoke. Then he sat down again. The air was cool and fresh, a mountain breeze blowing up. They didn't talk, but looked at the fire and at the stars just above the mountains. They could see the bare peak of Mount Chavanaugh shining in the night sky to the north. Then Lewis took Jamie down along the creek and cut three green willow shoots and sharpened the ends and went back to the campfire.
"Your grandma has a surprise for you."
"What is it?" Addie got out a bag of marshmallows and poked one over the sharp end of each of the sticks. Hold it near the fire. Let it brown up and get soft. He held it out, and it flamed up at once. Blow on it. Addie showed him how to brown it slowly by turning the stick. They ate two or three each. Jamie's mouth and hands got sticky with the sweet insides and blackened with marshmallow ash. When they finished eating, they put the food in the pickup cab for the night so it wouldn't attract bears. Then Lewis took Jamie to the campground toilet and went in with him with a flashlight. "Just do your business and come out," Lewis said. "We don't have to linger in here. You want me to stay with you?" "It stinks in here." Lewis pointed the flashlight down into the gaping dark hole of the tank. "Go ahead." "I'm not leaving you." Lewis turned away, and the boy pulled down his pants and sat on the seat with the open tank under him. He was afraid of it. When he was done, Lewis used the toilet, and they went outside where the dog was waiting. They breathed again in the fresh air. They walked over and washed their hands and faces at the pump and went back to the tent. "It stinked in there, Grandma." "I know." She got Jamie ready for bed in the sleeping bag, with Bonnie lying on the pillow beside him. "Where will you be?" "We'll be sleeping here, right next to you." "All night?" "Yes." He went to sleep, and Lewis and Addie came into the tent after an hour and got undressed and lay down and held hands and looked at the stars up through the mesh window of the tent. There was the sharp pine smell of the trees. "Isn't it nice like this?" Addie said. In the morning they had pancakes and eggs and bacon, and then tidied up the camp and put the food and cooking pans in the cooler in the back of the pickup, and drove up farther in the mountains on the highway to Monarch Pass, and stopped and got out at the Continental Divide and looked out over the western slope. And if their eyes had been good enough, and if they could have seen over the curvature of the earth, they could have seen the Pacific Ocean 1,000 miles away across the mountains. At noon, they drove back to their camp and ate cheese sandwiches and apples and drank cold water from the old-fashioned well, pumping it out with the green pump handle, and then took a hike up to the waterfalls on North Fork Creek and sat and watched the water crash down into the clear green pool below. When they hiked down to the bottom, the air was cooler near the falls. The air misted on their faces. They returned to camp, and Addie and Lewis set up folding camp chairs in the shade by the creek and read their books. The boy and the dog wandered around in the surrounding trees. "Can we take a walk somewhere?" Jamie said. "You can follow the creek," Lewis said. "Which way do you think it's running?" "Down there."
"Why is that?"
"I don't know."
"Because it's going downhill. Water always wants to flow to a lower place."
"Where do you want to go?"
"That way."
"That's downhill, downriver. To get back here to camp, what would you do?"
"Turn around."
"Smart boy.
Follow the creek upriver and come back to our tent. Your grandma and I'll be waiting for you. Try it once. Go a little ways and then come back. Take Bonnie with you. But don't cross the creek anywhere. Stay on this side."
The boy and the dog went down away from the campground and came back, and then went farther down and poked around in the rocks and examined the shining mica and climbed on the big boulders and lay looking down into the water. Then they moved back up the creek.
"What did you see?" Lewis said.
"We didn't see any bears, but there was a deer."
"What did Bonnie do?"
"She barked at it. We just turned around. That's all we did." In the evening, they made another small fire, and Addie cut up onions and peppers and put them in butter in the iron skillet, and put in the ground-up hamburger and tomato sauce, and a spoonful of sugar and Worcestershire sauce, and a quarter cup of ketchup and salt and pepper, a sauce she'd made before they left home, and now stirred it all together and laid a lid on the pan. Lewis and Jamie got out the hamburger buns and the leftover chips from the day before and set everything ready on the table, all the plates and unbreakable cups. Jamie took the dog and the empty jug down to the pump and came back with sweet, fresh water. And the three of them ate, sitting by the fire, as the night came down. The boy gave Bonnie some of his sloppy joe and looked at Lewis to see what he thought. Lewis winked and looked off into the trees.
"Will we see any bears tonight?" Jamie said.
"I doubt it," Lewis said. "If we do, it'll be a black bear. But they won't hurt us unless they get scared. Bonnie would warn us anyway."
"I'd like to see one from the pickup, from inside."
"And that'd be the way, all right."
"Are you worried about it?" Addie said.
"I just would like to see one."
They poured water on the fire, and the wood steamed and smoked, and the red coals blinked out. And then Lewis took Jamie out into the trees with the flashlight shining ahead. He stopped.
"You can pee here," he said. "We don't have to go to the toilet when it's dark like this."
"I'm not supposed to do it outside."
"It's all right this time. Nobody will see us."
He turned the light off.
"The animals pee out here. I guess we can this once."
They both peed on the ground, and afterward Lewis turned the flashlight on and let Jamie carry it. The light flickered and looped up and down on the trees and underbrush. They walked back to the tent. The next day they drove down out of the mountains, back onto the plains. Other people were coming up now for the weekend, towing big campers that looked out of place in the forest. When they got down on the plains, the air was hot and dry, and the country seemed flatter than it had been, and more bare and treeless. They reached home after dark and were tired. They showered and went to bed right away, in their two separate rooms. Chapter 28. In early August, Jean came out from Grand Junction to visit, and Addie and Jamie met him at the door.
"I don't see the dog you've been telling me about," he said.
"She's at Lewis's house," Jamie said.
"You call him Lewis?"
"Yes, he said to."
They went in, and Jean took his bags upstairs to the back bedroom where Jamie and the dog slept, and put the bags on the bed.
"I'll stay in here with you in my old room."
"What about Bonnie?"
"She can't sleep in here with both of us."
"She always sleeps with me."
"We'll see how it goes."
They went back downstairs, and in the late afternoon, Lewis came over to say hello, and he brought the dog along. Jamie knelt down in front of her and petted her and took her outside to play in the yard.
"Stay out of the street," Jean said.
"We do this all the time, Dad."
They went on out.
Jean looked at Lewis.
"I hear you stay here with my mother, too."
"Some nights I do."
"What's that about?"
"Friendship, for one thing."
"What are you doing?" Addie said. "You know about this."
"What am I doing?"
"My mother's sleeping with an old neighbor man while my son's in the other room, and I'm not supposed to ask about it."
"That's right. How can this be any of your business?"
"It's my business if my son is here."
"There's nothing to see," Lewis said. "I don't think it's hurting him. I wouldn't be here if I thought so."
"I don't think you're the one to judge. You're getting what you want. Why would you care about a boy that belongs to somebody else?"
"But I do care about him."
"Well, you can stop. I don't want him to be affected by this. I know about you. When I was a kid, I heard about you."
"What about me?"
"How you left your wife and daughter for some other woman."
"That was over 40 years ago.
"It still happened, and I'm sorry it did. But I can't go back and fix it now."
Lewis watched him for a moment.
"I think I'll leave. This isn't helping anything."
"I'll call you later," Addie told him.
He stood and went out.
"Why are you being this way?" Addie said. "What's wrong with you?"
"I don't want my son to be hurt."
You don't think he's already been hurt by his father and mother this summer?
Yes, I do think so. And now it's getting worse.
You don't know what you're talking about. He's far better now than when you left him here. And if you want to know the truth, Lewis has been good for him.
Because he's after your money, too, isn't he?
Whatever are you talking about now? If you married him, he'd get half of everything, wouldn't he? I couldn't stop him.
We're not getting married, and he's not interested in my money. My God, what little you must think of me.
He looked away. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've got to start over.
You know I'll help you.
For how long?
As long as it takes. As long as I can.
You're getting tired of it already. You must be.
Well, I'm still doing it. You're my son. Jamie's my grandson.
The next two nights, the dog stayed with Lewis at his house, and the boy slept upstairs in the back room with his father. And on the second night, Sunday night, he had a bad dream and woke up crying and would not be consoled until Addie came in and held him and took him back into her bed. On Monday, Jean told them goodbye and drove home. When his father was gone, the boy went to Lewis's house and put on the dog's leash and the protective tube on her paw and came out with her and walked around the block and up the alley to Addie's backyard and played with her there while she and Lewis watched him.
"It was bad last night," Addie said. "It was like when he first got here, having those bad dreams. He was upset again. Now Jean tells me Beverly is coming back home in a couple of weeks."
"What's going to happen then?"
"I don't know. They're going to try again, I guess. She'll move back in. And Jamie will start school."
"He could take the dog with him when he goes, if they'd agree."
"I don't know if they would."
"Why don't you ask?
It'd make some difference anyway." They looked out at Jamie and Bonnie in the backyard.
"Should I come over tonight?"
Lewis said.
"You'd better, you dirty old man."
"He didn't say I was dirty."
"But I know," she said.
Chapter 29
Lewis said, "It was awful for her that last year. She was just always sick. They tried chemotherapy and radiation, and that slowed it for a while, but it was still there, and it never was out of her system completely. She got worse, and she didn't want to have any more treatments. She was just wasting away."
"I remember," Addie said. "I wanted to help."
"I know.
You and all the others brought food. I appreciated that. And the flowers.
But I never saw her in her bedroom."
"No, she didn't want any company upstairs except Holly and me. She didn't want anybody to see her, as she looked then in the last months. And she didn't want to talk. She was afraid of death. Nothing I said made any difference."
"Aren't you afraid of death?"
"Not like I was. I've come to believe in some kind of afterlife, a return to our true selves. A spirit self. We're just in this physical body till we go back to spirit."
"I don't know if I believe that," Addie said.
"Maybe you're right. I hope you are."
"We'll see, won't we?"
"But not yet."
"No, not yet," Addie said. "I do love this physical world. I love this physical life with you. And the air, and the country, the backyard, the gravel in the back alley, the grass, the cool nights, lying in bed talking with you in the dark. I love all that, too. But Diane was worn out. At the end, she was too tired and too weary to pay attention to her fears anymore. She wanted out, relief, an end to her suffering. She suffered terribly in the last months. So much pain, even with sedatives and morphine. And she was still scared most of the time underneath.
I'd come in, I'd check her in the night, and she'd be awake, staring at the dark through the window. "Can I help you?" I'd say. "No." "Do you want something?" "No. I just want it to be over." Holly would help bathe her and would try to get her to eat, but she wasn't hungry. She wouldn't eat anything. I suppose in some way she knew she was starving herself. She was so frail and tiny at the end, her legs and arms like sticks, her eyes looking too big in her head. It was awful to watch, and more than awful for her, of course. I wanted to do something for her, and there wasn't a thing more to be done than what we were already doing. The hospice nurse came every day and was very good and helped make it possible for her to die at home. She didn't want to go back to the hospital ever. So that's how it was. Finally she died. Holly and I were both in the room. She stared at us with those big, dark, staring eyes like she was saying, "Help me, help me. Why won't you help me?" Then she quit breathing and was gone. People say the spirit stays around for a while floating over the body, and maybe hers did. Holly said she had the sense of her mother being in the room, and maybe I did too. I couldn't be sure. I felt something, some kind of emanation. But it was very slight, maybe just a breath. I don't know. At least she's at peace now in some other place or higher realm. I think I believe that. I hope she is. She never really got what she wanted from me. She had a kind of idea, a notion of how life should be, how marriage should be. But that was never how it was with us. I failed her in that way. She should have had somebody else. "You're being too hard on yourself again," Addie said. "Who does ever get what they want? It doesn't seem to happen to many of us, if any at all. It's always two people bumping against each other blindly, acting out of old ideas and dreams and mistaken understandings. Except I still say that this isn't true of you and me. Not right now. Not today." "I feel that, too. But you might get tired of me, too, and want out." "If that happens, we can stop," she said. "That's the understood agreement for us, isn't it? Even if we never actually said so." "Yes. When you get tired of this, you can say so. And you, too." "I don't think I'll get there. Diane never got to have what we do, unless she had somebody I didn't know about. She didn't, though. She wouldn't think that way." Chapter 30. In August, there was the annual Holt County Fair and Rodeo and Livestock Judging at the fairgrounds on the north side of town. It started with a parade coming up from the south end of Main Street, coming up the street toward the railroad tracks and Old Depot. It was raining the day of the parade. Lewis and Addie put on raincoats and cut a hole in the end of a black plastic trash bag to put over Jamie, and the three of them walked over to Main Street and stood along the curb with the other people. There were crowds along both sides of the street, despite the weather. The honor guard came first, carrying the limp, wet flags and shouldering, dripping rifles. Then there were old tractors muttering up the street, and old combines on flatbed trailers, and antique hay rakes and mowers, and more tractors puttering and popping, and the high school band reduced in the summer to only 15 members wearing white shirts and jeans, all soaking now and sticking to their skin. Then the convertible cars with the county notables inside, but with the tops up because of the weather. And then the rodeo queen with her attendants on horses. The girls, all good riders, wearing ranch slickers, followed by more fancy cars with advertisements on the doors, and cars for the Lions Club and the Rotary and Kiwanis and the Shriners zigzagging around in the street like fat show-off kids in their hopped-up go-karts, and more horses and riders in yellow slickers and a pony cart, and toward the end of the parade there was a flatbed truck with a cardboard religious picture on it, and a riser at the front entered in the parade by one of the evangelical churches in town. On the riser there was a wooden cross and a young man standing in front of it with long hair and a dark beard, wearing a white tunic, and because of the rain he was holding an umbrella over his head. When Lewis saw him, he laughed out loud. The people standing nearby turned and stared at him. "You're going to get yourself in trouble," Addie said. "This is serious here." "I guess he can walk on water, but he can't keep it from falling on his head." "Hush," she said. "Mind your manners." Jamie looked up at them to see if they were really angry. At the end of the parade, the Holt street cleaner came sweeping up the street with its big, rotating brushes. In the afternoon, the rain stopped, and they drove out to the fairgrounds and parked and walked through the stock barns, past the sleek horses and the groomed cattle with their puffed-up, ratted tails, and looked at the great hogs lying on the straw on the cement flooring in the pens, lying there fat and panting and pink, batting their ears. And they walked past the goats and sheep all trimmed and shaved, and then out through the cages of rabbits and chickens, and around to the carnival area. They put Jamie on the Ferris wheel with Addie. Lewis said the rides made him sick. Addie and the boy rode up and around, and when they were at the top, she pointed out Main Street and the grain elevator and water tower and pointed to where their houses were on Cedar Street. "Do you see my house?" "No. Right over there, with the big trees. I don't see it." They looked far out beyond the edge of town to the open country where they could see farmhouses and barns and the windbreaks. Afterward they tried some of the games, the rifle shoot and ball throw, and bought Jamie pink cotton candy on a paper cone, and icy slushy drinks for themselves, and wandered around watching the people, and then went back, and she and the boy rode the Ferris wheel again. By now it was late afternoon. They could hear the rodeo still going on from the arena on the other side of the grandstands, the loud, cheerful voice of the announcer. They didn't buy tickets to go into the rodeo stands, but walked down past the far end and looked over the fence at the calf roping and bull riding. There was a quarter-mile horse race on the dirt track, and they watched as the horses galloped by, the jockeys standing up now in their irons after they had passed the finish line, the horses wide-nostriled and stirred up. Then they went back to the car and drove home, and the boy got the dog out of Lewis's kitchen, and they had supper on the front porch as the day was ending. Chapter 31 Lewis mowed his lawn, and then mowed Addie's, and dumped the grass out of the rear catcher into a wheelbarrow, and Jamie pushed it around back and tipped it out in the alley onto the musty pile there, and came back for more. When they were finished, Lewis sprayed off the mower with the hose and put it away in the shed. In the corner, he lifted the lid from the nest box. "Do you think we'll ever see those mice again?"
"We might," Lewis said. "We'll have to keep watching."
"I wonder where they went. I wonder if the mother ever found them." They went into Addie's kitchen and drank iced tea, and then went out into the side yard in the shade and played catch. Addie came out with them. Bonnie raced back and forth, chasing the ball and jumping in the air and grabbing it up when it hit the ground, and ran in circles until they caught her. At noon, Lewis went home, and Jamie kept the dog with him at Addie's and ate lunch with her, talking quietly. And then he and Bonnie went upstairs to the back bedroom, and the dog lay sleeping at the foot of the bed in the warm room while he played with his phone and called his mother. "I'll be seeing you soon," his mother said. "Didn't I tell you? I'm coming back home." "What does Dad say?"
"He says that's good. We both want to try again. Aren't you glad?"
"When will you come?"
"In a week or two."
"Will you live in the house?"
"Of course. Where else would I live?"
"Well, I don't know. Maybe some other place?"
"Honey, I want to be with you."
"And Dad?"
Yes, and Dad.
Chapter 32
A few nights later, Addie and Lewis and Jamie went out to the Wagon Wheel restaurant on the highway east of town and sat at one of the tables near the big windows. There was a view of the wheat land out to the south. The sun was going down and the stubble was beautiful in the lowering light. After they ordered their dinner, an old man walked over and sat down heavily in the vacant chair, a big solid-looking man in a long-sleeved shirt and new jeans, his face very red and wide. Lewis said,
"You know Addie Moore, don't you, Stanley?"
"Not as good as I'd like to."
"Addie, this is the famous Stanley Tompkins."
"I ain't too famous, more like infamous."
"And this is Addie's grandson, Jamie Moore."
"Let me see your grip, son."
The boy reached out and shook the old man's thick hand, and the old man winced, and Jamie stared at him.
"I heard you two were seeing each other," Stanley said.
"Addie's willing to put up with me," Lewis said. "Makes me think there might be hope for somebody else in this life."
Addie patted his hand.
"Thank you. It is a hopeful thing, isn't it?"
"You know anybody wants to curl up with a old wheat farmer?"
"I'll start looking," she said.
"I'm in the phone book. I can be reached."
"So what's happening?" Lewis said.
"Oh, you know, the usual. My boy got the wheat in and took off for Vegas. He couldn't stand having a little money in the bank. Took some gal with him, too, from over at Brush. I never met her. I guess she's good-looking."
"Why didn't you go with them?"
"Oh, hell."
He looked at Jamie.
"Excuse me. I never got much out of sitting around with strangers messing with cards. If you was to have a game of poker at your house, or somebody else here did, that would be a different story. You'd know who you was playing with, and it would be more fun. But I'm no good in cities, anyway."
"How did your wheat do?"
"Well, it was pretty good this year, Lewis. I don't want to say this out loud, but this was one of the best years we've had in a long time. The rain came at the right time, and there was a lot of it, and we never got no hail on our place. Our neighbor to the south did, but we was just lucky all around."
The waitress brought the plates of food.
"I'm keeping you from your supper."
He stood up and reached out to shake the boy's hand again.
"Now take it easy on me."
The boy tentatively took his hand and barely touched him.
"Okay. I'll be seeing you."
"Take care."
"Good to meet you, Mrs. Moore."
After they'd finished eating, they rode out to the country and drove to the Tompkins place northeast of town and stopped and looked at the stubble fields in the starlight, and they all looked thick and even.
"He must have done pretty well," Lewis said. "I'm glad of it. He's had bad years, too. Everybody has."
"But not this year," Addie said.
"No, not this year."
Chapter 33
"He died during church on a Sunday morning," Addie said.
"You know that?"
"Yes, I remember."
"It was in August. It was hot in the sanctuary, and Carl always wore a suit, even in summer, even on the hottest days. He thought it was what he had to do as a businessman, as an insurance agent. He had some notion about keeping up appearances. I don't know why or for whom it mattered, but it mattered to him. Halfway into the preacher's sermon, I felt him leaning against me, and I thought, 'He's gone to sleep.' Well, let him sleep. He's tired. But then he slumped forward and bumped his head hard on the back of the pew in front of us before I could catch him. I reached for him, but he just kind of folded forward out of the pew and dropped onto the floor. I bent over. I whispered to him, 'Carl, Carl.' The people around us were watching him, and the man sitting next to him slid over in the pew to try to help me lift him up. The preacher stopped talking. And other people got up and came to try to help. 'Call the ambulance,' someone said.
We got him lifted off the floor and laid him out on the pew. I tried breathing into his mouth and pumping his chest, but he was already gone. The ambulance men came. "Do you want to take him to the hospital?" they said. I said, "No, take him to the funeral home." "The coroner will have to come before we can move him," they said. So we waited for the coroner, and then finally he came and pronounced Carl dead. The ambulance took him over to the funeral home, and Jean and I followed them in the car. The funeral director left us with him in the back room, where it was sort of formal and quiet, not the room where they do the embalming. I said I didn't want him embalmed. Jean didn't want him embalmed either. He was home from college for the summer. So we sat in the room with his father's body. Jean wouldn't touch him. I bent over his face and kissed him. He was already cold by then, and his eyes wouldn't stay shut. It was eerie and strange, and very still in the room. Jean never did touch him. He went out of the room, and I stayed there for a couple of hours, and pulled a chair up beside him and leaned over and held his hand and thought of all the times that had seemed good between us. And eventually I told him goodbye and got the director and told him we were finished for now and that we wanted his body cremated and made the arrangements. It was all too sudden. I was in some kind of trance. I think I was just in shock.
"You would be, of course," Lewis said.
But even now I can see it all clearly and feel that kind of otherworldliness. The sense of moving in a dream and making decisions that you didn't know you had to make, or if you were sure of what you were saying. Jean was terribly upset by it. He wouldn't talk about it, though. He was like his father in that. Neither one of them ever talked about things. Jean stayed here for a week, then went back to college and was allowed into his apartment early, and he stayed there the rest of the summer. It would have been better if we could have helped each other, but that didn't happen. I don't think I tried too hard myself. I wanted him to stay, but I could see it wasn't helping either one of us. We were just avoiding each other, and when I tried to talk to him about his father, he said, "Never mind, Mom. It doesn't matter now." Of course it did matter. He had a great build-up of anger and resentment toward Carl, and I don't think he's gotten free of it to this day. It's partly what affects his connection with Jamie. He seems to be repeating what happened between him and his own father.
"You can't fix things, can you?" Lewis said.
"We always want to, but we can't."
Chapter 34.
On a Sunday, they sat at the kitchen table over their morning coffee. There was an advertisement in the Post about the coming theatrical season at the Denver Center for the Performing Arts. Addie said, "Did you see they're going to do that last book about Holt County? The one with the old man dying and the preacher?"
"They did those other two, so I guess they might as well do this one too," Lewis said.
"Did you see those earlier ones?"
"I saw them. But I can't imagine two old ranchers taking in a pregnant girl."
"It might happen," she said. "People can do the unexpected."
"I don't know," Lewis said. "But it's his imagination. He took the physical details from Holt, the place names of the streets and what the country looks like and the location of things. But it's not this town. And it's not anybody in this town. All that's made up."
"Did you know any old brothers like that? Did that happen here?"
"Not that I know of, or ever heard of. It's all imagined," he said.
"He could write a book about us. How would you like that?"
"I don't want to be in any book," Lewis said.
"But we're no more improbable than the story of the two old cattle ranchers."
"But this is different."
"How different?" Addie said.
"Well, it's us. We don't seem improbable to me."
"You thought so at first."
"I didn't know what to think. You surprised me."
"Don't you feel okay now?"
It was a good surprise. I'm not saying it wasn't. But I still don't understand how you got the idea of asking me.
I told you. Loneliness. Wanting to talk in the night.
It seems brave. You were taking a risk.
Yes, but if it didn't work, I'd be no worse off, except for the humiliation of being turned down. But I didn't think you would tell anyone about it, so it would be just you and me who would know if you did turn me down. But everyone knows now. They have for months. We're old news.
We're not even old news. We're not even news of any kind at all, old or new, Lewis said.
Do you want to be news?
No. Hell, I just want to live simply and pay attention to what's happening each day.
And come sleep with you at night.
Well, that's what we're doing.
Who would have thought at this time in our lives that we'd still have something like this? That it turns out we're not finished with changes and excitements, and not all dried up in body and spirit.
And we're not even doing what people think we're doing.
Do you want to?
Addie said. That's entirely up to you.
Chapter 35. Toward the end of August, Jean drove over the mountains and out to Holt on a Saturday to take his son home. He arrived at his mother's house late in the afternoon and came up and hugged them both and then walked down the street with Jamie and the dog.
"Don't you like her?"
"Of course I do."
"You don't ever touch her. You haven't petted her once."
He leaned down over the dog and patted her head and talked kindly to her. And they went on around the block, then back up to Addie's house through the alley. They ate supper, and at night Jean slept with Jamie and the dog together in the same double bed in the back bedroom. Lewis stayed away. In the morning they packed up Jamie's clothes, toys, and baseball stuff, and the dog dish and food. And then the boy said, "I have to say goodbye to Lewis."
"We need to go."
"Just for a minute, Dad. I have to."
"Don't take too long, then."
He ran over to Lewis's house, but he wasn't home. He opened the door and called inside and ran through the rooms. He came back crying.
"You can call him later," his father said.
"It's not the same."
"We can't wait. It's going to be late already by the time we get home." Addie hugged him hard and said, "Now you call me, you hear? I want to know how you're doing and how school is."
Jamie was clinging to her. She gradually loosened his hands.
"Just be sure you call me."
"I'll call, Grandma."
She kissed Jean.
"And you be patient."
"I know, Mom."
"I hope so. You call me, too."
They started up. The boy and the dog together at the window in the back seat, looking at her, standing on the curb. The boy was still crying. Addie watched the car until it turned out of sight. By the time it was dark, Lewis had not come over to her house yet, so she called him.
"Where are you? Aren't you coming over?"
"I didn't know if I should."
"You don't understand yet, do you? I don't want to be alone and brood like you do, working things out by myself. I want you to come over so I can talk to you."
"Let me clean up first."
"You don't need to clean up."
"Yes, I want to.
I'll be there in an hour."
"Well, I'll still be here," she said. "I'll be waiting."
He shaved and showered, as he always did, and in the darkness of evening he walked over past the neighbors' houses, and she was sitting on the porch waiting for him, and she got up and stood on the steps and kissed him for the first time where people could see them.
"You're so wrong-headed sometimes," she said. "I don't know if you'll ever learn."
"I never thought of myself as a slow learner, but I must be."
"You are when it comes to me."
"I know what I think of you and how much you mean to me, but I can't get it in my head that I mean anything like the same to you." I'm not going into that again. That's your problem, not mine. Now let's go upstairs. In bed, they held each other in the dark, and she said, I don't know how it's going to work out. Are you still talking about us? I'm talking about my son and grandson and the boy's mother. He was crying when he left. Do you know why? Because he's going to miss you. Yes, she said. But he was crying because he didn't get to say goodbye to you. Where were you? I went out to drive around in the country, and then I decided to drive over to Phillips to eat lunch and didn't get back till late afternoon. He went to your house to see you before he left. That's how much he cares for you. I care about him, too. I just hope Gene and his wife can do better. Maybe they've learned something over the summer. I'm already worried about them. What did you tell me? Something about not being able to fix people's lives? That was for you, she said, not for me. I see, Lewis said. Oh, I feel better already talking with you here next to me. We haven't even said much of anything yet. But I do feel better already. I thank you for that. I'm grateful for all of this. I feel very fortunate again now. Chapter 36. After Jamie had left, they tried to do what the town thought all along they'd been doing, but hadn't. By now, Lewis had long begun undressing in the bedroom. He got into his pajamas and was faced away from the bed where Addie was lying under a cotton sheet, and then he turned toward her, and without his knowing, she had drawn the sheet back and was lying naked on the bed in the low light of the bedside lamp. He stood looking at her. "Don't stand there," she said. "You make me nervous." "Don't be," he said. "You look lovely. I'm too heavy around the hips and stomach. This old body. I'm an old woman now." "Well, old woman Moore, you've won me completely. You're just right. You're how you're supposed to look. You're not supposed to be some 13-year-old girl without any breasts and hips." "Well, I'm not that now, if I ever was." "Look how I've turned out," he said. "I've got this gut on me. My arms and legs are thin old man's arms and legs." "You look good to me," she said. "But you keep standing there. Aren't you going to lie down? Are you just going to stand there all night?" Lewis got out of his pajamas and slid into bed, and she moved over closer to him and took his hand and kissed him, and he turned on his side and kissed her and touched her shoulder and touched her breasts. "It's been a long time since anyone did that," she said. "It's been a long time since I've done anything like this." He kissed her again and touched her, and then she pulled him closer, and he lifted in the bed and lay kissing her face and neck and shoulders and moved over and started to move and then stopped after a short while. "What's wrong?" "I can't stay hard. I've got the old man's complaint." "Have you had this trouble before?" "No, but I haven't tried this for years either. The limp time has come, as the poet says. I'm just an old son of a bitch now." He lay back and settled beside her in the dark. "Do you feel bad?" she said. "Yeah, a little. But more than anything, I feel I've disappointed you." "You haven't. It's just the first time. We have all the time ahead of us." "Maybe I ought to try some of those pills they advertise on TV." "Oh, I think it'll be all right. Let's try again another night." Chapter 37.
After dark one night, they walked over to the grade school playground, and Lewis pushed Addie on the big chain swing, and she rode up and back in the cool, fresh night air of late summer, with the hem of her skirt fluttering over her knees. Afterward, they went back to bed in her upstairs front room and lay